proud and downtrodden and dejected, crestfallen, grief-stricken and exhausted, trapped in my room while the house was burning to the motherfucking ground.
Hello and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the weekend music. My name is Charlie.
My name is The Greatest.
And we are back, baby. Woo! Coming off of that 2017 hot, coming into that 2018 even hotter mark.
Yeah.
Season 3 of Weekly Beats. Are you ready for this?
I'm the most ready. I've been ready for many things in my life. I'm a well-prepared person. But for this, Charlie, I'm the most ready I've ever been.
Forget about it.
It's insane.
We're talking 30-second breakdowns all year. We're talking new albums from your favorite artists all year long. We're talking deep dives in the classic favorites, Mark. We're talking about episode 100 in a matter of weeks here. I could not be more excited.
I could be more excited.
Okay, fair enough. We'll try to get you there before it happens.
I couldn't be more prepared. I could be more excited.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we just want to say thanks so much to those of you that made Season 2 so great. We had a lot of fun wrapping things up with our Best of 2017 lists. You can check all those out in the podcast feed, Best Tracks, the annual Beatsies Awards for the crazy stuff, plus Mark's and myself's Best 15 Albums of 2017. They're all out there for your listening pleasure. A bit contentious this year, but I think we both agreed that it was a fantastic year on the whole, right?
Yeah, it was. It did get a little hot and heated during the debates there. I
thought you were going to say hot and heavy, which it did also get, but off the air.
Immediately following the hot and heated moment, it got hot and heavy, which you can all hear in the Beatsies, I think, pretty clearly.
Lots of tension.
A lot of simmering tension, for sure. A lot of erotic simmering tension.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking ahead to 2018, simmering tension. We're looking ahead to 2018, Mark. What are your New Year's resolutions?
I want to, giving you an earnest answer, I want to do some reflecting on how I see the world. I want to be a better version of myself, and I want to think consciously a little bit more than I do. What about you?
That's the epitome of a New Year's resolution right there, of doing good things and making yourself into a better person.
Hell yes it is. What about you?
2018 is the year of no bummers, baby.
Hmm.
2018 is positivity. It's spreading positivity, of not being negative, of doing everything I can to help out other people.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a charged, like, okay, those last two were pretty bad. We're going into 2018, fists out, arms swinging.
We're running like Naruto anime characters down the streets.
With our arms behind
our
backs.
Completely behind ourselves, rushing through the air, just ready to be in the game, in the picture.
Yeah, it's going to be great. This is going to be a good year. Good things are going to happen. Well, probably some bad things are going to happen, but I think we're going to deal with it well.
The good will always overwhelm the negative. The good will overwhelm the negative.
The good will always overwhelm the positive.
All right, let's get into it, Mark. We were surprised with a New Year's release. Jeff Rosenstock, your friend and mine, has dropped his third official album here post on New Year's Day 2018. Time to get into a little conversation about that on the first half of the show. And then, as always, we'll be getting into the highest ranking song on the Billboard Hot 100. This week, Mark, any guesses? We've been out of the game for a little while. The pop music scene has shifted.
Yeah, I think it's actually shifted towards the classics. I think...
bringing them back.
Moonlight Sonata was this year's, or this week's Hot 100, yeah.
No, you wish. It's Ed Sheeran. He's back.
So that's basically as good.
It's a duet with Beyonce. It's the song Perfect is number one on the Billboard charts this week.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Okay, let's dig into that.
Always good to start off the year with Beyonce. We'll take some time after that to talk about what else we're listening to on our long winter's nap here. But in the meantime, let's talk Jeff Rosenstock. This thing is post. Like I said, it was announced without fanfare. Total surprise on New Year's Day. We had no idea this thing was coming, but here it is in our hands. Mark, you spent a good amount of 2016's best of lists talking about how much you loved Worry and convinced me to love it in due time as well. You are our resident Jeff Rosenstock fanboy here. Tell us just, maybe for those who haven't been around this long, tell us a little bit why you love Jeff Rosenstock so much. Set the scene for us here.
Jeff Rosenstock is, if you haven't heard him before, he's a punk guy, but he's a friendly punk guy. That's a really fun place to sit in. His music's pretty posy-vibed, it's pretty politically charged. But in like a kind of human way.
In a playful way.
In a playful way. He even experiments with the sound a lot. The compositions are usually pretty interesting. He uses some pretty unconventional instruments to get his points across. He was a figure in the punk scene in the early 2000s, mainly in the ska punk scene. And then dipping into hardcore for a while. And now he's sort of come full circle to every kind of punk music. And I thought this album was great. I had a great time listening to Jeff Rosenstock's album this year.
It's really exciting to get an album from him again. Would you say that Worry was his sort of magnum opus when he's like unveiling himself to the world as a legitimate threat in the music industry?
It's like the culmination of his career. Like he actually plays songs as if he was in Bomb the Music Industry.
Right.
And his hardcore stuff briefly. But yeah, it's like all of his life's work coming together in a single album. It's like a great place to start.
A great album. A ton of fun front to back. I love it for the Abbey Road medley that's on the B-side of that album. It's just a ton of fun. And I think on the whole, people took really strongly to it. So it's great that he's kind of sneaking this album out without any expectations getting in the way of how good it ends up being. And it is very good to listen to the whole way through. I think there's something that is very intentional on Jeff's part on releasing this album on the 1st of January 2018. This feels like the perfect day to listen to this kind of album, because if you look at the song or the album title, Post, you know, that implies a lot of things that we are not just post, but post hyphen, post something.
Right.
So maybe it's post youth, maybe it's post mainstream music, post America, post 2017, whatever it ends up being. There's the idea of moving past something and becoming a better person as a result.
Right.
And that sentiment is the exact sentiment I want to color the entire year. And I couldn't be happier that Jeff Rosenstock is the one providing that incentive, that buoyant message that's going to carry me through till December.
It's funny, too, because he also, he digs into a feeling that I think pretty much anybody has at any given point who's like watching the news, regardless of where you fit on the political spectrum, which is, I have so many things to say and no venue with which to voice them. Like, I can't take an action to do anything to make this specific thing that makes me mad any better. Mm-hmm. That sort of level of being defeated is, I think, a big part of this album, but he spins it in such a way to make it something. Feeling charged is not a bad thing. Like, I feel like he turns it around again to make it into a positive force.
For sure. I mean, last year it seemed like one of the big themes was successive releases of albums from male white artists that were trying to comment on the political and cultural turmoil without actually saying anything beneficial or getting caught inside of their own rhetoric and tripping over the ideas they were trying to put forward. And so Jeff opens up with a song here, USA, which is 7 minutes long, very long, typically for his style of music, and in which he kind of goes for a similar idea, but I think he navigates it much savvier than other folks. For me, it's impossible not to read Donald Trump into these kinds of lyrics when the chorus is, please be honest, tell me, was it you? Kind of begging someone, like, just tell me, were you part of this problem? Did you vote for this guy?
Yeah.
But also, I think Jeff his music has been carried by his sense of humor, by his self-deprecation, the fact that he can make fun of himself so easily, which makes him very approachable. And I think even though the song is long and political, in a year, 2017, that is, where we got message after message that missed the mark, this one feels like it's more on target.
Yeah, definitely. It's also kind of interesting the like narrative shift the song takes of being this. It almost reminded me of that Marilyn Manson track with the fake cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Whatever they're chanting, hey, hey, go USA. But midway through the track, it sort of devolves into this dream, this like weird starry dreamscape of just like Moog synthesizer stuff. And then immediately kicks into the hard stuff again. And it captures the surreal quality of the world right now, especially in America.
Yeah. I guess one of the questions I have here is having these longer songs, USA at 7 minutes and then the closer Let Them Win, which is 11 minutes in length, these hugely long songs, especially for Jeff Rosenstock. I guess I'm not super sure that he uses that space as well as he could. That I tend to like him and he's quippier and punchier and more personal. And I think sometimes in those longer songs, he doesn't get into what he is best at. I still enjoy the songs overall, but I'm not as convinced of the power of his music in those songs as I am some other moments on this thing.
Yeah, you're primarily talking about USA and Let Them Win, right?
Right.
Which are like putting them together, they're basically 20 minutes on a 40-minute album.
It's half the album, right? Yeah, it's crazy.
It is kind of crazy. I think it's more a problem in Let Them Win because it's just this like 5 minutes of fade out. Like I almost consider that track to be about 6 minutes long or so or whatever. And then just some noise at the end.
Yeah.
I think I was listening to this on loop to get ready to record. And it listening to it that way gives context for those tracks in a way that I kind of like. Or this like... you're sort of like falling in and out of consciousness. You kick back into Good Morning or Morning, excuse me. Morning. 5 second track.
Hey,
Morning.
Friend. Hope this makes it on your new album.
Weird moment, but there's something to be said for that effect. Like I didn't mind it. Yeah. But I do think he does not wield the lengthy tracks with as much certainty as the shorter, punchier ones.
I guess I just don't feel as necessary, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that long extended synthy middle section of USA to get back into that we're tired and bored chanting when we were just there before that moment, I don't know if it really is emphasizing the themes of that song in the way I want it to.
I don't know. I think it kind of does. I think the idea of being exhausted and being, like, caught in a surreal space is I think you feel that, but I think it also gets in the way a little bit too, so I don't know.
Well, and you brought up the cheerleading chants at the very end there too. Apparently this lyric has been widely debated by some folks online, some people believing that he's saying F-U USA, but the official lyric he is both confirmed through tweet here as et tu USA, which is to say and you USA.
Like et tu Brute.
Exactly.
And you, Brutus?
And you,
kind of a funny
Usa?
Line if you think about it. this is kind of a weird line if you think about it.
Yeah. And you, Brutus?
And you, Brutus?
And Brutus is like, oh, man, me too?
Me too. Hashtag me too, for sure.
Yeah.
So well, that's what that hashtag was about, right?
No, you missed the mark completely. We're going to stop there before you embarrass yourself any farther.
I'm pretty sure. Well, okay.
Yeah, no. The for me, the song really gets going around, I guess it's technically track three, but it's the second full song on the album, Your Throat, which I think is a quintessential Jeff Rosenstock song. This thing is filled with energy and enthusiasm, and it's got a political message to it as well.
Yeah.
It is just a treat. I love this song.
It's great. And it's this... like power trifecta of Your Throat, all this useless energy and powerlessness, which depending on the track get more or less like personal, like specific to him and maybe a person, but man, that is like the narrative of 2017, right? It's like there's so many things happening that seem real bad and you want to do something about it and there's literally nothing you can do about it. You can get involved,
right?
And you could take small steps to change things in your area, your community, but like I don't like that the president is talking about big buttons. Yeah. And like, there's nothing I can do. I can tweet them all day. Nothing's going to happen.
Right.
I don't think I've seen any art capture that. That feeling of like, I'm just sat here looking at the TV and how bad things are, and there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool somebody captured that. I think Jeff Rosenstock did a good job. Good job, Jeff.
Good job. And the fact that all of these things are also built up with some great guitar work, tons of fun instrumentation inside of here. Two great guitar solos on both these things. You mentioned Powerlessness, man. It's just like two notes that he's just like strumming rapidly back and forth. But man, does he nail it. It's just full of energy. I love Powerlessness too. All This Useless Energy I like a lot as well, but of those three, it's maybe like the low point for me.
Right.
But Your Throat, it gets into the music industry, I guess, in the lyrics there. I thought it was, if you're a piece of you know what, then I'll right. let you know, which I thought was a great lyric. But the actual lyric is, if you're a piece of you know what, they don't let you go.
Yeah.
Meaning like those higher up. So it's coming in from like the Weinstein effect of those folks in power right. in specific industries. Even if you're garbage and everyone knows it, they won't do anything about it.
Yeah, that's
so.
That's how I
lifting up the voices. You know, what good is a voice if it gets stuck inside your throat? How good are you if you don't speak up against those things and actually do something about it?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Totally.
And then we get a triumphant guitar solo over top of that, man. It's just great.
It is great, man. It's great. Everything's great.
2018.
2018's got to be great.
Either that or we're all just delusional before it all goes wrong.
It's like, yeah, that moment of bliss right before you die, right? Your brain has that effect where you feel great.
The morphine is in the system. It's kicking in.
Man, isn't that weird that your brain's like, you should want to die. Let me make this easier for you.
Anyways.
It's like and you, Brutus. I mean, we should change our podcast to be about stuff Mark finds kind of weird.
Yeah.
Brutus. Hey, you know what I really like?
What?
TV stars.
I bet you like this thing, man.
Yeah.
Tell me why you love it.
It sets the scene, man. It's this, like, slower track on the album. It has the same like keyboard organ work that was in Worry that I like so much from Staring at the Window, Your Old Apartment. And it's a little less, I guess, urgent than the other tracks on the album. It's a little more specific to him. But just this image of him sat alone in his apartment. He could be there all month. Like, I relate to that pretty well. I was a big fan of this.
Yeah, and I think this is another great song that demonstrates his songwriting capabilities. Those other ones, I mean, they're great songs, but this is where he becomes personal and filled with personality. He opens up, if I'm acting like I'm drunk on stage and you're shocked that I'm playing anything, I'll get away with it. A little bit later on, I can't see you in another's arms. Like, it's cool. I just can't imagine it.
Yeah.
That's so good. That's so good.
That's so good. Let's just say that. Let's just continue to say that for our 10 minutes. Our Jeff Rosenstock reveal will be complete.
It's like someone traded out my skin for something I could never feel good in and told me, suck it up, get used to it, to breathe in, repeat it.
Like, I can't emphasize enough. Like, punk music was very important to me as an adolescent, and a lot of those classic punk albums still resonate with me today, but there is a certain, like, I'm more brutal than you kind of, like, crappy culture around that stuff that totally lessens it. There's something so good and refreshing about, I'm a normal dude, I got things to say, punk music. Like, it is the exact voice in punk that I think I have since I was like 15 or whatever, 14, listening to Dead Kennedys. It's like the voice in punk that I had been waiting to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I'm this guy's great. I'm so happy. Man.
Well, he's got that.
This album is great.
Yeah. He's got that aging perspective, right? Or he's getting older. He's not as good as he used to be. And that's kind of been the crux of a lot of his works. Anxiety of it, like the you know, Love Is Worry, all on the previous album.
Keep in mind, yeah, this first album was called I Look Like Shit.
Yeah.
It's just a picture of him in which he does indeed look like shit.
Yeah. Great album covers consistently from this guy, which I guess maybe directs us to the album cover here. What do you think this is about? Is this the lobby to a music industry spot, some record label?
Yeah, it's definitely a lobby, but there's something, at least for me, when I'm looking at this, whatever, wherever this person is working, I'm not sure, but this image of being in this person in a corporation who's vacuuming, who's like inside the gate and all he gets to do is vacuum, and his face is obscured by what looks like an ad, is a perfect representation of what America is kind of like.
Yeah.
How the way power structures work in America, what the average person's world looks like that.
But it's also someone cleaning up after something too, right?
Right.
I got like, hey, all that crazy stuff happened, and now all that's left to do is plug in the vacuum cleaner and sweep it up.
Yeah, it's going to be up to the people who are working the lobby
to
make the people who are working upstairs be held accountable for their actions.
It's great.
It's great.
Similarly to TV stars, I found myself going back to 9 out of 10 a whole lot. Because I love the guitar solo inside of this thing because it sounds so different from the rest of the album. It's another low-tempo sort of ballady song. But I love the chorus here. Lyrics say, 9 times out of 10, I'll be stoned on the subway, reading backlit directives of what I should do, dodging eye contact with anyone who looks my way. 9 times out of 10, I'll be thinking of you.
That's good.
Which just gets to, again, that sort of hopeless romantic that's in all of his songs, but also riddled with anxiety and not wanting to talk to anybody else outside. It's full of personality. It's full of heart. Very personal. And we say our good buddy Jeff Rosenstock, I feel like he is the best buddy. Like, he is just constantly someone that we want to be around and talk to and spend time with.
He has come out swinging day two of the year as a strong contender for the 10-4 award for Best Buddy 2018. I mean, let's be real here.
Don't think it's those going to be difficult ballots to aren't getting counted right now.
One thing I do like about 9 out of 10 is it's one of the moments on the album in which he is the most experimental. He tends to use a lot of bells and xylophones and things occasionally to give his songs kind of a whimsical feel.
Right.
Whenever he's being kind of very down earth. Yeah, and I think 9 out of 10 is a really, it's like an interestingly composed thing too, on top of that, of being like a good and relatable listen.
You know what else I love about it?
What?
It's the 9th track out of 10 tracks on the album.
Oh, you love that.
Oh, I love it.
Why do you think Mornin exists? Why does this thing open with Mornin?
Who is that?
I don't know.
I'm going to head to my friends at Rap Genius and see if they have any idea. Nope.
Okay.
No annotations here.
Oh, man. It would be great if someone... I'm going to annotate that. Good morning is a thing that a person says to another person
there
when they've woken up to greet them in their day.
Now you're thinking like a genius.
That should be their trademark. Why isn't it their trademark? Genius.
Now you're thinking like a genius.
But yeah, I get kind of overwhelmed at looking at the track list of this thing at Post. Like Post USA, All This Useless Energy, Powerlessness, Beating My Head Against a Wall, Let Them Win. For an album that on its face is this defeatist, it's got so much energy and drive to it. It's got so much.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
It inverts all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's about taking all that stuff and turning it into positivity. So the chorus is not let them win, but we're not going to let them win.
Exactly. That's what the album title is. Post is the prefix in front of all of these words. Post TV stars. Post Melba, because that is a memory of a thing. Post beating my head against a wall. Like, this is
post powerlessness.
Post 9 out of 10, because now it's 10 out of 10. You get a perfect score, Jeff.
Yes. 10 out of 10. He did it. I always knew he could.
Yeah, and in 40 minutes. Like, this is everything that I want out of punk. Like, this is, whenever I think about why this genre is important to me, it is more or less an album like this.
Just to throw in some negative stuff, just to slow your roll a little bit, I will say that Beating My Head Against a Wall is not a great song. I know he's going for like a Ramones kind of callback thing there. It's very straightforward and simple, but I find it more annoying than anything else.
You know, I don't dislike it, but there's something kind of all over the place about the guitar work in it.
Yeah.
There's something that feels like, I don't know. There's a lot of like sweet and sugary riffs in this thing. There's a lot of like listening to his music is like eating candy. There's not a lot of like meat and potatoes. It's a lot of let's get to the catchiest part the fastest.
Right. Sure.
So I don't want to discount the role in the album that song plays of slowing it down a little bit, like making you better appreciate the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel a little clunky. I will give you that. I'll give you that.
All right.
You got a clunker.
I would say
it's a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, probably a 9 out of 10. I think because of that, it maybe makes it of his three albums, his three like full length albums, maybe my least favorite of them, just comparatively. But the other two are so good.
There's four, right?
I think I Look Like You Know What is an EP.
No, that's a full album.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, on Spotify, it's not in the albums thing. That's why I'm going from it.
Yeah, but it's like 40 minutes. I mean, what's really the distinction, you know?
All right. Well, of the three that I've listened to then, Post, Worry, and We Cool, I'd say it's my least favorite of those three. I still enjoy it a whole lot, and it's a great record. I'd recommend it to everyone that's listening right now. But mm-hmm. I'd also say if you haven't listened to Jeff Rosenstock, go check out Worry immediately because that thing is just a ton of fun.
Better than We Cool, worse than Worry. That's what I'm saying. And
when was the last time you listened to We Cool?
I listened to Jeff Rosenstock a lot. maybe 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
All right. I'll talk a little bit about that in the second half of the show because I listened to it for the first time this past week and had a lot of fun with it.
Okay. It's going to be hard to pick tracks for this thing. Did you make your 2018 list on Spotify?
Oh, you better believe I did because I put the Mimicking Bird song from last year on it. I moved Sunlight Days into that playlist. It was the first song on there. So, and wait, just to cover that, you know, the first song is usually one that I'm totally annoyed with by the end of the year. Because two years ago it was that Mr. Noah song by Panda Bear,
right?
Which annoyed the bejesus out of me. and last year it was Dangerous by the XX. And every time I heard those horns, I was like, oh my God, get those horns out of my head. So I'm setting Mimicking Birds up for failure here, but it's their fault for releasing something so early.
Yeah, dude, you're the only person on Earth that I could possibly think that would relate to me on that, but totally. Like, the second I hear the XX come on.
I'm like, nope, can't change it fast enough.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably by the end of the year, I'm going to think USA sucks. Yeah. I think this whole thing sucks, but
so that's,
for right now, I'm in it.
If I've learned anything over the past few years, it is to stop playing January's music as soon as possible. Listen to as much different stuff as you can, but don't touch these early albums until at least May, because then you're going to hate them.
Because your list, your playlist is going to be big enough at that point. But early in the year, we got like 20 things on there. Man, I don't know. I guess I'll listen to this again. Sure. The like one in like 280 or whatever, one in 300 chance that I have of hearing an XX song on my 2017 list is still too high.
I hear you. But man, I'm so glad Jeff Rosenstock was the guy to come back with an album this year. He seems like the ideal person to lead us into this new year. I can't imagine anyone else just hitting it right on point. And I think I said to you that I was doing a lot of traveling this holiday season and was driving back to my place on New Year's Day. And the whole way back, I listened to Worry. I'm like, oh, man, I got to listen to that album again. That's a great album. I put it on, and then I pulled into my place out here, and sure enough, there it is, new Jeff Rosenstock album right there.
That's right. That's a good road trip album, too, I have to imagine.
You know what? You know what? It's a great anytime album, Mark.
You know what? I agree.
All right. So give me your tracks. It's got to be four, right?
It's definitely it's a four. I feel like, I don't know. I haven't settled if this is going to be the four for the whole year. I feel like I have to think about this a little bit harder. But as it stands right now, I have USA. I'm taking your throat. I'm taking your throat. I'm taking
I will take
TV
your throat.
I'm post taking your throat. I have your throat now. I'm taking TV stars. I'm taking 9 out of 10.
Because
I like it. I feel like there's two slower ballads on here, though. I'm wondering if Melba shouldn't make it on, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I would take two other tracks before Melba.
Oh, what's your list?
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark. I'm only taking three.
Okay.
Just because USA could make it. If there was going to take a fourth one, it would be USA, but it's just not quite there for me yet. I'm not convinced that 7 minutes of track length is doing it all the way through for me. With time, it could make it, but I want to see if it works its way up there. But for now, my three are 9 out of 10, Your Throat, and Powerlessness, man. You got to get Powerlessness on this list. That song is great.
Yeah, maybe. This is tough. I like this album so much, I feel like I've been paid to like it. Like, I feel like I'm coming across as suspect right now.
You're an influencer. You're a Jeff Rosenstock influencer.
Hi! Well, click the like and subscribe button, of course, as you do the end of every stream. If you want to purchase more from Jeff Rosenstock, go to jeffrosenstock.bandcamp.com. Did you go to his Bandcamp?
Here. Yeah, I did. I got the album.
It's got a great image of someone flipping him off as his cover photo.
I love how self-deprecating he is. His sense of humor is amazing.
Yeah, but, like, not theatrically so. Like, he at every point comes across as a genuine human. Like, I saw a picture of him, because I follow him on social media, a picture of him during the Women's March.
Look at you. You're a shill.
I've been retweeting. I've been retweeting and liking and subscribing. I saw a picture of him at the Women's March just hanging out. And other celebrities who, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't call him a celebrity necessarily, but other, like, celebrities who went to the Women's March, there was something kind of conspicuous about them aside from the fact that they were famous. Like, they were still like, all your casual clothes look so expensive compared to everyone else's,
right?
Like, and he just looked like a dude. Like, yeah. I know what this man looks like, but I would not recognize him in a crowd because he just looks like a person. He's just a regular dude. He's great.
It's the year of the regular dudes, 2018.
I think that was 2016.
Okay.
We all got together and we had a regular dude here. Now it's time for the weird dudes.
All right. 2018, the year of the weird dudes. Let's make it happen. That's Jeff Rosenstock. That is post. Certainly couldn't be a better way to kick off 2018 than a visit from our old pal, Jeff. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll dive into the first 30-second breakdown of 2018, which is Ed Sheeran's and Beyoncé's. So stay tuned.
Hello, best friend. Hello, best friend.
Alrighty, we are back and ready to dive into the latest from the Billboard. 2018 belongs to Ed Sheeran and Beyoncé, Mark. This is a cut off of the album Divide called Perfect. Do you know it?
It's a chip off the old block. Do I know Perfection? Oh, you bet I do. I know you, Charlie.
Well, we haven't heard anything from Ed Sheeran since his days of Sweet and Sour early in the year last year. So,
but we sure have been hearing a lot about Sweet and Sour, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we never stopped hearing about it. It was a contender for worst lyric of the year.
And can you – that was nominated for a Grammy, right?
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
Can you, like, imagine – like, the scope of expression that was available to the Grammy, the people award people the Grammys, yes. That they were selecting everything like that. No, honestly, that Sweet and Sour song's pretty good.
Well, he's at getting least in the cab. Lord made it into all their considerations, and 2018 will also be the year of our Lord.
That's true. Weird
right.
Boy year.
Let's see what we got.
I found a love for me. Well, darling, just dive right in and follow my lead. Well, I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. Well, I never knew you were the someone waiting.
Right. Sorry. I thought I was at prom for a second. I snapped out of it. Holy crap.
You were. That's an Ed Sheeran sound and song right there.
Man, I want to slow dance with you so bad right now.
If only we could.
If only we could. I would just, it would be like my head would be on your shoulder and you would be, you got your football scholarship to that college and I'm not ready to let you go yet. That's what I'm getting out of the song so far.
Well, after a hot streak of collaborations, Beyonce hops on to the chart-topping guitar ballad Perfect, originally by Ed Sheeran. This version is a soft acoustic remix of the original track and also features choir backing vocals. Although, this is the first duet between the two legends, they have sung together in the past to honor Stevie Wonder at the 2015 Grammys.
I'm sorry, but I refuse to acknowledge Ed Sheeran as a legend.
Well, yeah, but he's certainly a popular name.
A legend. I will acknowledge that in the very British way, he is a ledge, but I do not think he can be bestowed with the title of legend.
Well, if there's one thing that he does well, it's write sappy emotional love songs. And I gotta say that at least I like this better than Shape of You, because that felt disingenuous and creepy. And this is at least redheaded and prommy.
Did you say throbbing?
Prommy.
Oh.
Like at a prom?
Yeah. Well, proms are pretty throbbing, generally.
That's true. They're not mutually exclusive.
Neither is me and you.
We got some lyrics here. I found a love for me. Oh, darling, just dive right in. Follow my lead. I found a girl, beautiful and sweet. I never knew you were the someone waiting for me. Because we were just kids when we fell in love, not knowing what it was. I won't give you up this time. But, darling, just kiss me slow. Your heart is all I own. And in your eyes, you're holding mine.
Oh, you're getting emotional. Did you choke up a little bit?
About as generic as you could get right there.
See, yeah, but I caught you. I saw a tear roll down your eyes. You said that.
The genius annotation for the first lines, Ed incorporates the title of the album's third track, Dive, and mimics a couplet from Shape of You. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Remember that lyric?
I can't forget it.
On both Shape of You and Perfect, Ed initially takes a more dominant position, both in dancing and in beginning a relationship. This suggests that he was the first one to make a move, and possibly the first to fall in love.
Wow, that's a genius annotation for you. That sounds like a publicist wrote it.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear some more?
No.
His current girlfriend, Cherry, went to his high school, and they were actually quite close friends. Ed dropped out, became super successful, and homesick. Ed's since returned to his hometown and found love where it always was, waiting for him.
There's something about the line, well, I found a girl beautiful and sweet, that feels like... like folklore? It feels like a poem from, what was that, like medieval series of stories?
The Canterbury Tales?
Yes, this feels like it's from the Canterbury Tales. Like, I feel like she's going to be a demon frog.
I found her love, darling, so sweet.
Can you not see Ed Sheeran as like a Renfair guy, though?
Totally. I mean, he was in Game of Thrones.
Oh my god. Maybe that's why I think
he's
that.
A sucker for fantasy.
His life is a fantasy.
He's just a bard. He's a lonely bard with his little mandolin. He's going to travel around and sing you songs.
I talked for hours and hours about the mutton.
And she... the mutton in this hour.
We got in the carriage and talked for hours and hours about mutton.
Ed and Cherry Seaborn, his girlfriend, have a long history together. They both went to the same high school in Suffolk and may have had a crush on her when they were younger. Yeah. In 2016, after being in a long-distance relationship with Ed, Cherry moved from the U.S. back to the U.K. to spend more time with him. Ed has hinted in many interviews and in his songs that he's considering marriage and kids. And this line only further confirms his commitment to Cherry.
Hmm. Well, great. I will say one thing. It's an evocative song. I mean, it's like that first 30 seconds... sure made me remember what high school romance looked like, which I guess Ed Sheeran is equipped to do.
That's basically the only thing he knows how to do. Let's see what else comes.
For me, 'cause we were just kids when we fell in love, not knowing what it was. I will not give you up this time, darling. darling, just kiss me slow. Your heart is all I own, and in your eyes you're holding.
Almost perfect, but not quite there. He didn't work out the mathematical formula to make this thing a success.
All right. I don't mean like in terms of quality. Like, I didn't just hear that and go, oh, that was almost perfect.
Well, I mean, it's literally perfect, the song, but it was almost perfect timing.
Right. Yeah. Because obviously, yeah, that's exactly right. It is perfect. I mean, this is way better than anything that we've talked about on the show so far.
What would it be like to only own someone else's heart?
What do you mean?
Like, he says, your heart is all I own. Can you imagine not owning anything but someone else's heart? Sounds like the setup for like a apocalyptic thriller, like Mad Max. Like, this is my slave. I own his heart. He owes me a debt. I have nothing else. And we have to travel across this great desert wasteland, and he's going to pay his debt back to me.
You have to kill the demon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see Ed Sheeran doing that, sure.
Yeah.
After I was going to say that, I mean, especially going back to Jeff Rosenstock, this idea that all you own is someone's heart. I mean, that is the capitalist world we're living in. All we can do is rent things. We're millennials. We can't own anything. So I think Ed Sheeran's making a big statement here.
Post perfect.
I don't know. This is pretty innocuous to me so far. This didn't skeeve me off like Shape of You did.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. I don't necessarily find it powerful or interesting or creative.
No, no.
But at least it's not immediately off-putting like that song was.
Yeah. I think Shape of You had a sort of like suave appeal for some people. It had this like danceable seduction kind of thing going on that I didn't really buy from him. I don't think the song really sold me on that vibe, but a dorky prom love song, as one of those, like, this is, I don't know, this is that. So, it's that. I can't say it's good.
Right.
Like, I'm trying to say that word, and it's not coming out.
Well, the people love it, Mark.
Yeah, well, I guess it is very popular, or else we wouldn't be talking about it.
Yeah. Well, let's keep going.
My baby, I with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass, listening to our favorite song. When you said you looked a mess, I whispered underneath my breath, but you heard it.
Man, you know, a 16-year-old girl named Tiffany is listening to this in her bedroom right now because she knows Steven is going to college and she cannot come with him.
Why Tiffany?
I honestly bet that's literally happening. I okay. would actually put money that there is a girl named Tiffany having that moment with this song.
Okay. Some more annotations here. Ed has explained numerous times that the reason why his previous relationships didn't work out is because he never had any time. The singer recently took a year off to spend more time with Cherry. Now the bond between them has grown even stronger, and he's found a balance between work and his personal life. He now has time to dance with his girl, go on dates, and do normal things. That's not an annotation for the lyrics. It's just gossip. It's just a tabloid column he threw into the Genius annotations.
That's a really good point.
There's no discussion of any lyrics there whatsoever.
But it's well written, right?
I mean, in the fact that it's not riddled with typos and grammatical errors like previous annotations, then yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, for the lyric, when you said you looked a mess, I whispered underneath my breath. The annotation reads, Ed Sheeran is just saying that even when she thought she looked bad, he still thought she was beautiful. So, like, I guess I would prefer the gossip to that?
I don't know, man.
Well, You just got to get into it, man. I mean, I feel like every time we have a guest on the show, they point out to us that we know virtually nothing about the gossip about these artists. And I think that's a key part of the appeal.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if engaging with this particular sect of pop music, it's necessary to keep up with that stuff to fully appreciate it. Sort of like, you need to at least a little bit understand diss tracks and rap. Like, you need to know a little bit of why Kanye is saying this about this person to fully grasp, like, the culture surrounding the song.
Are you saying this is a diss track?
Yes, I'm saying this is a diss track against Kanye West.
Oh, okay.
Ed Sheeran wanted to join the Illuminati as a fourth member, but he was denied.
Oh, man. That makes so much sense now.
I talked for hours about Sweet and Sour with you.
Yeah, one of the lyrics he has here says, "Barefoot on the grass, listening to our favorite song. Perfect was written for Sheeran's girlfriend, Cherry." In case you didn't know that at this point. And the favorite song that he mentions is actually, believe it or not, Mark, Future's March Madness.
That's awesome.
In an interview with Entertainment Tonight Canada, Sheeran explained the inspiration behind the line. He says, "The song that we're listening to is Future's March Madness, which is like the least romantic song in the world. We were in Ibiza at James Blunt's house for some reason. There was a certain point in the night and people just put on house music. I just don't like house music at all. So I changed it to Future's March Madness, and there were a bunch of 40-year-old people like, 'What are you doing? What is this?' And then we had a dance."
And then we had a dance.
Oh, man.
That is the best image I've ever heard.
March Madness.
Hold on. So they're barefoot in the grass. They're having their lovey-dovey moment. You're so beautiful. God, you're so beautiful when you smile. Look at that. Glistening smile. I'm so glad I found you. You're gorgeous.
Wow. I hate this decade.
That's a terrible decade. Is there a conversation to be had about pop music there, though? Like, the idea that if he was being authentically himself in that moment, like, for that song, wouldn't the idea that that's kind of, like, idiosyncratic to be listening to, like, a hard trap song in your, like, gentle romantic moment, wouldn't that be part of the narrative there? Like, wouldn't you feel that in the song? Like, that would be, a touch of personality? Like, well, isn't there something to be said about the decision to be, no, don't talk about how I actually had this happen. Just have it be generic that everyone can agree?
Yeah, exactly. It's marketability. It's being able to see yourself in that moment. Because you know who loves Ed Sheeran? My mom. And you know who doesn't know who Future is? Also my mom.
Your mom's got to dig into Future a little bit. Your mom's got to get in a trap.
Yeah.
Mom, this is Young Thug. You're really going to like this. Why?
I just want to tell you about some beautiful thugger girls.
This is a song about him inviting a girl over. It's got really good romantic lyrics in it. I think you're going to like it. I think legally, if you give your mom that Young Thug song where he, from Beautiful Thugger Girls, where he requests, it was our worst lyric, I think, it won.
Yeah, yeah.
That I will not repeat here. I think you legally are required to talk to a therapist.
Yeah,
if you give your mom that song.
All right, Mark, we got to press on because we're not even halfway through this thing yet.
Darling, you look perfect tonight. Found a man stronger than anyone I know. He shares my dreams. I hope that someday we'll share our home. I found love.
So that's Beyonce?
That's Beyonce. She's back.
Wow. This is, I think, the proper venue for Beyonce. An Ed Sheeran verse.
Yeah. Feature. Though it's been a long time she's done stuff like this. I mean, yeah. Lemonade was pretty all over the place.
Yeah, you didn't like that album. You thought it was a little scatterbrained?
I thought it was pretty garbage.
Yeah. You hate Beyonce. Like, for new listeners who just started listening because they hated your stuff, keep in mind, Shirley hates Beyonce.
Yeah. No, I think she's keeping it pretty restrained here. I mean, obviously, it's just the opening to her verse. We'll see where she goes by the end of the song, but it seems like it's a good fit for her.
Right.
I'm surprised T-Swizz isn't on this thing. You know, I feel like she'd be the one that would fit up nicely since they're so buddy-buddy.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
I guess Ed Sheeran got a little bit too big for his britches.
With Taylor?
Yeah.
Taylor's
He's like, hey, Taylor, old Taylor is dead now, so I'm moving on to my new friends. Illuminati.
I control the world. You're saying he said that to Taylor Swift? He's the he's the originator of Taylor is dead, the old Taylor's dead?
Oh, maybe. I don't know that I agree with that, but it's an interesting theory.
The old Taylor's dead, long live the new Taylor?
Yeah. That's a very medieval thing he would say.
All right. He'd be playing a lute as he said it.
Totally.
Drinking mead.
What is mead?
Like meat beer. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
You just get a lot of meat juices and put it in beer, and then it's mead.
Cool. That sounds good.
Cool.
All right.
To carry more than just my secrets, to carry love, to carry children of our own. We are still kids, but we're so in love, fighting against all odds. I know we'll be alright this time. Darling, just hold my hand. Be your
Just hold my hand.
Sorry to cut you off there, Beyonce.
Just hold my hand.
Oh, yep. The only annotation on Beyonce's verse is for the lyric to carry love, to carry children of our own. I wonder what they have to say there.
Please tell me.
Beyonce and JD have carried children of their own. Their 5-year-old daughter, Blue Ivy, has already made her musical debut and is arguably the most famous child of any celebrity. As of recently,
what?
Beyonce's newborn twins, Rumi and Sir, have been getting a lot of buzz. The couple has been low profile with their new children, so any spotting of the twins gets attention.
I spotted the twins!
That used to be her breasts, but now it's just her kids.
Just people, that would be a rare sight. I spotted them.
I spotted the twins.
That's Ed Sheeran. That's Ed Sheeran behind the bushes saying that.
Hmm. So then the lyric afterwards says, "We are still kids, but we are so in love." Beyonce does a present tense rendition of an earlier Sheeran lyric from the first verse. Instead of focusing on how they were kids when they fell in love, she brands herself and Jay as still childish, but in love. Certainly their circumstances of her relationship's beginnings are different. Jay is 12 years older than her, and both were well into maturity when they started dating around 2003. 14 years into the relationship and 3 children later, Bay and Jay's love for each other is still burning strong, with the virility of a young couple, but the durability of a mature one.
This is definitely a love ballad. If you had to make a generic love ballad for a television program, like during a wedding scene.
Yeah. This would work.
Yeah. You would write this.
Let's keep going and see how crazy she gets.
Girl, you'll be my man, and I see my future in your eyes. Well, baby, I'm dancing in the dark with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass, while listening to our favorite song. When I saw you
in- taking Molly's.
Percocet. Molly Percocet.
Yeah, Future call out. She called out Future there. So she is the honest one.
She likes Future.
Yeah. She's like, and that song was by Future. And then she just goes on with the verse. It's good.
And I see Future in your eyes.
That's not a good thing. I don't want anyone to see that when they look at me.
Percocet. Molly Percocet.
The phrase, I see Future in your eyes, is identical to saying, I think you're too high to be in public right now.
Oh,
no. Do you see Charlie? What was that, Charlie? I see future in his eyes. We got to take him home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not bad today. I didn't even know today.
That's
I don't know today.
That's a great song. That's a really stupid song.
Dumbest song, you might say.
I think that would be for that year. I think that would be a contender.
For sure. All right. We still have a minute 20 to go here.
Oh,
so
my God.
I'm going to keep forcing it. All right. I got to keep the pedal to the metal.
And that dress looking so beautiful. I don't deserve this. Darling, you look perfect tonight.
I mean, it's inoffensive, right?
Well, if only it was offensive.
In 2018, everything's offensive.
Yeah. I don't know. I would never, ever listen to this. It's kind of interesting. Like, Shape of You, I didn't like, but it was... The potential of me liking it is greater. Like, I think he's being more ambitious with his songwriting ability in Shape of You. This is, like, totally flat, but I think it's better executed. So I'm not really sure which I would prefer over the other.
It's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah. I mean, if you had to
That's
pick.
A good point. It's, like you said, it's two musicians that have clear talent that are performing a simple song well, but ultimately that's pretty generic and cut from similar cloth of lots of other pop ballads versus something that is reaching and challenging but also poorly written and ill-advised.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, honestly, I actually don't I don't think I mean this as in an insulting way, I guess I should say, so I'm not sure how it's going to come across, but this is the kind of song you would write if you were learning to write songs for the first time. Like, if you were learning to play the acoustic guitar and you're learning about, like, the scales and stuff, like, I feel like this is the song you would write, you know?
And you tell someone that they look perfect tonight.
Yeah, like, you would write this for your girlfriend because you have to go to the football college because it's your dream, but you're promising not to let her go.
You have to go to football college?
those are the words I said. Aren't they?
It's a good football college. I gotta go to football college. I don't know what I'm gonna do there. I guess football.
I think I'm gonna do biology.
Okay.
Where'd you get your biology degree? Football college.
Football college.
I learn about how a ball hits you in your head and it makes you bad at it.
The mascot is the football. The footballs.
Their mascot is a football. Their memorabilia, their footballs have a football on it to commemorate that they are the football college.
Yep.
And they have a record on track to tie with the Browns in the college football field.
The college football place. Where do you go to that college football place? Oh, football college.
I don't know things about football. All right?
That college football place. Oh,
in the dark, with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass, while listening to our favorite song, I have faith in what I see. Now I know I have met an angel in person. She looks perfect.
I don't. Still not done. We're still not done.
No. Okay. Right now, Shape of You or this?
I take this over Shape of You.
Oh, wow, it's not even over yet. That's how much you don't like Shape of You.
That's how much I like Beyonce.
Okay. Yeah. Fair. Fair enough.
Okay. Here's a question. Do you think they recorded this at the same time, or do you think they recorded separate duet tracks and just mashed them up?
I think Beyonce Skyped in.
Yeah. Because I was going to be like, do you think if they're in the studio together, like, if you're Ed Sheeran, do you try to be better than Beyonce, or do you just, like, hope what you sing is okay and, like, She's just like playing it cool. Like, are they trying to outdo each other, or are they just trying to like sound good?
Can you imagine if that were true, though? Can you imagine if Ed Sheeran was sitting there like, oh, I'm going to blow her mind.
Get ready, Yonsei.
Yeah. Future looks on.
Straight up.
And he's like, am I at the Beyonce concert? Nope.
Whoa, that Beyonce.
You're
that Beyonce.
Future, please. You're producing this.
Oh, what?
You're producing this Ed Sheeran track. We're using you as a producer. No. You've kept saying that, you've repeated that ad nauseum for the last hour. We understand that you've blown a bag, but you need to start working on a song.
Do you think that Future carries around like a voice modulator with him, so when he speaks out loud his voice just sounds like that, or does he actually just speak normally?
I think he had it surgically installed in his throat.
There you go. Now you're thinking.
Now you're thinking with Bortles.
I got this thing inside of my throat. It made me nice. Oh, man.
You look perfect tonight.
Oh, see, you can tell it's real there. See, did you hear that at the end? You can tell it's real now. Yeah, you heard him get up from the stool. That was
same stool that the Lumineers are hanging out inside of still.
Our turn yet? No.
That's their next album title. Is it our turn yet?
It's not your turn.
Is that your Ed Sheeran?
It's Ed Sheeran's turn.
Man, what a guy.
I love this song. I'm going to put it
on
the
list. Well, it's got to be on last year's list because it's 2017.
Yeah, I'm not putting it on the list.
What?
What?
I don't know.
What was that? What was that? Wait. You really don't know what that was?
Something's coming through the speakers. It's Ed Sheeran. He's mad about what we're saying about him.
You play all your list.
Now he's Scottish.
I'll kill the Batman.
Which Batman villain is that? Oh,
it's Ed Sheeran. The most terrifying Batman
villain.
He's doing
so many other things these days, really extending beyond the music.
Sheeran's thugs are tearing apart Gotham City.
Terrible music. What if he just sang, like, crass limericks as he tried to fight him?
There once was a Batman. I don't deserve this moment.
You look perfect tonight.
Batman. Batman, have you ever heard of this food called sweet and sour chicken?
We talk for hours and hours about the sweet and the sour.
He's too powerful. I can't win.
I don't even want to bother. It's not worth it.
It sucks. I can't I'm going to let him.
Just to care about this villain.
My job's not worth it. I'm Bruce Wayne, by the way. I'm believing. Gotham isn't worth it.
My mom keeps telling me he's the worst villain out here, but I just don't see the appeal. He's so real, she keeps telling me. He sings from the heart.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't buy it.
I don't get it at all. I mean, I feel like I thought it was a Joker. But I guess more people think Ed Sheeran is the better villain. I don't know.
Bizarre.
Wow.
All right. Well, I'm not going to take it myself, so.
Yeah. I'm going to.
Hard pass.
I'm going to play the song that plays at the end of Wolfenstein 2, and I am not going to take it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay. Well, on to bigger and better things, Mark. What else have you been listening to this week?
So I have two things. Let me turn on my speaker here. So I listened for the first time in its entirety, let me make sure I'm getting the album title right here, to
There's That Sound.
You miss it? Did you miss that sound?
Of course I did.
Yeah, wow, this is not working. See, now you get to cut this part out. This is going to be fun. Or leave it in and have it be embarrassing. It'll be great either way.
I'll get to decide.
Okay. I listened in its entirety to Headhunters by Herbie Hancock for the first time.
Nice!
Yeah, it's amazing, dude. Herbie Hancock's really good.
He's the bomb dig, man. He wrote some good stuff.
Yeah, I had heard, like, plenty of covers of Chameleon. I don't think I ever actually just listened to Chameleon, though.
Chameleon's a jam, dude.
Yeah, I know, like, it's a well-known thing, but I just want to play Chameleon for a second.
Yeah. Oh.
What's that? It's like such a good start to a thing, man.
That's funk, man.
Yeah, let's cut it. It's 15 minutes. Get
into
it.
Get into this thing.
That percussion is amazing. Insane. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I don't know what got me to list the Headhunters. I just kind of did. The other tracks on the album are also all really good, and now I kind of want to learn everything there is to learn about Herbie Hancock.
As someone that has laid down some jazz in my time, Hancock is the man.
Yeah.
He's got so many great tunes. I'm a big fan of Watermelon Man.
Yeah.
There was a movie I saw at one point that had some like jazz tune in it, and I'm like, man, I know that song. What is that song? And sure enough, it was Watermelon Man.
I'll play a little bit of Watermelon Man.
Yeah, man, play some of that.
Second track.
Yeah,
that's good. Like, I'm not a huge fan of a Vein Melter, but it's a fine closer. It is great. Amazing percussion, like amazing. It feels so alive. Like, there's something to the idea that sort of synthy sound was new at the time, and I think other artists in the same vein that can sound kind of dated. There's a Maynard Ferguson album where he, like, discovered that synthesizers existed, and he basically has an album of him just poking around at it, and, like, he was talented, but, oh my god, does it sound dated. Like, it you can tell the whole purpose, like, the whole energy behind all of the tracks on that Maynard Ferguson album are, oh, this sounds new, this is contemporary. But whenever you base your sound around something, when you think critically about the best parts of this tool that you're using, it will be timeless, I think, is the lesson that I learned from Headhunters. It's amazing.
Yeah. I gotta listen to more jazz. That's good stuff.
All right. Second thing I've been listening to is not music. It's an audiobook called
Wait, is that allowed? Is that allowed?
I'm gonna say it's loud.
All right. I don't want this to become Mark's book club over here.
I've been reading recently. I read a weird article recently, and I want to talk about it.
I read The Fountainhead, and it changed my life.
Oh, God. I read The Fountainhead. Do you ever hear that? What's that guy from Shark Tank? Mark Cuban? Do you hear that Mark Cuban interview where he's just like, I read The Fountainhead like three times a year to get inspired?
Yeah.
That would be a miserable year.
It's not great literature.
No. Anyway,
no offense to those who like The Fountainhead.
Offense intended.
Okay.
I'm calling you out. Original Gangstas. The Untold History of Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube, Tupac Shakur, and the History of West Coast Rap. By Ben Westhoff, who I believe contributes to Pitchfork pretty regularly. It's basically like a Bible of here's how gangsta rap started, like on the West Coast. Like here is like the somewhat sordid history of these people, that has made me reflect in some ways on those artists. Last year I got real deep into the late 80s, early 90s hip hop kind of movement, gangsta rap movement. And specifically into Ice Cube. And I would say about half this book is just the history of the NWA. Obviously, yeah. There was a Straight Outta Compton in the movie that came out about them.
I was going to say, yeah, I saw that movie.
I think this book was released right after the fact.
Okay.
For marketing reasons. And the author
is
pretty quick to point out.
An advertisement in the book for the movie? Where it's like, go see this movie this weekend. It'll be really good.
No. There's like a bunch of moments where the author's pretty hungry to be like, this is not true. Like the movie is whitewashing some of this.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like there's a moment where I guess in the film, I've not seen the film, but you have, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Right.
I didn't love it, but it's fine.
Okay. I'm kind of curious to see it, but there's a moment in the movie where they're arrested after a concert.
Yeah.
Which is not how it went down. I guess in reality, they just fled the scene and then went to like a hotel and their fans were arrested sort of indiscriminately by the cops.
Yeah.
But man, I didn't like Eazy-E. Like that solo album, that debut solo album that he released put me off. I tried to revisit it again and remembered why, which is I think track 3. It's like a bunch of kind of like middling rap tracks. Like I don't think he's that skillful at his job. Like track 3 comes out, he's with a woman who turns out to be a man. That's his words. He misgenders this person over and over and then threatens violence. By pointing a gun at their genitals. It's like a really ugly, horrible thing. It's like extremely homophobic and awful. And now understanding that Dr. Dre essentially built him up, like Dr. Dre produced the crap out of him to make him a viable rap artist says a lot. I didn't realize that in his early years, like as a teenager, he had competitions with people to see how many women he could impregnate. He's also a wife beater. Just seems like a real scumbag. I understand that there is like a movement around idolizing him because what he did to the image of rap music, but I think a lot of gangsta rap, I'm starting to come to terms, like the book is very slanted towards, hey, here's some really bad stuff that's worth thinking about, but here's why it's important.
Yeah,
I do think Straight Outta Compton is important. I think especially Ice Cube's music is very important. Dr. Dre, I think, had an important role in that stuff. Like Tupac Shakur undoubtedly had an important role cultural dialogue, but some of it, I think, is not, like, some of the stuff is not a pill worth swallowing to me. For instance, Dr. Dre has a pretty horrible history, I've now learned, of abusing women in pretty horrific ways and then bragging about it.
Yeah.
There's a quote in the book where he's like, because there's social messages in a song about indiscriminate police brutality. And there's a quote where, like, he pulled a track where he talks about killing cops. And someone said, like, why did you do that? And he said, because money's more important to me than writing a song about killing cops, which is a crazy stance to have.
Yeah.
And I guess reading this book has made me realize that, A, rap music now, people get scared of it still. But, like, Kendrick Lamar, Kanye West, Killer Mike, these are people who are way clearer. Like, they're so much easier to get behind. Like, whenever they make a cultural statement, I don't feel like I need to forgive them for being awful.
Right. Vince Staples I'd throw in there too.
Absolutely Vince Staples.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny though that like listening to this book has kind of made me think like, man, the only person I still feel like okay about in the NWA after hearing all this is Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Like there's
even he's
a...
got some songs that you've said don't work.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, but he's also come out and said, I was being kind of racist there. I'm sorry. That was sexist.
Right.
He did not apologize at the time, but I like to at least believe that he knows that stuff sucks. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's kind of opened up a question in my mind of like, what is the line where if something is culturally important, but the people behind it are kind of despicable, like, where do you draw the line? Like, I guess I'm asking you, like, where do you draw the line personally of, okay, this person has done some bad stuff, but this music is important. Like, is there a line for you there, or are you able to completely separate the artist from their work?
I mean, I think it's a struggle, and I think it's hard to make like a universal case even to say that this is where the line is, because I also think that, you know, different artists mean different things to different people. And, you know, you look back on the string of comedians and actors that have had their despicable actions brought to light, and I think that's a question that a lot of people have been asking recently. And I think it comes down to the individual. I think it's obviously worth having a conversation about and talking about as a culture, you know, trying to move past it so we don't have to have those kind of conversations going forward. But like you said, you know, if what they are producing or did produce is so culturally important, then how do we continue to value that while espousing or not espousing, but acknowledging the more negative aspects?
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like, you know, if you've seen old like 1930s Looney Tunes cartoons, you know, those things are riddled with racism and stereotypes and not very pleasant, but
right.
They have been released to the public. They haven't been put on lockdown, but they all come with like a PSA at the beginning saying, look, we know these things have not aged well and that there's negative things inside that are not at all appropriate in today's modern climate, but they still represent a time period in our nation as we were growing and maturing and coming to understand things better. And so just to preserve it for its historical impact, we're going to keep it exactly as it is and not try to edit or censor or change anything from what it was. I think there's value in that.
Yeah. Like saying, like, face this, like acknowledge America's kind
of. And let's have a conversation about it. Yeah. Let's talk about how it's changed, how we've grown more mature or more capable of recognizing that stuff in today's climate. There's a conversation to be had there. I don't think we should remove it and forget about it instantly, because then it becomes a slippery slope of like, well, where's the line there of what we do get rid of and what we don't get rid of? I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, I don't really want to even enter censorship in the conversation, because for me, that's not even part of it. Like, I wouldn't make the argument. Which I guess is, I don't know, maybe it is part of it, because part of the book is how, like, Ice-T wrote that song about killing cops, and it ruined his career because Dan Quayle got involved, the vice president. So I guess censorship is part of the question, and I don't think it should be. Like, to be clear, it's not a slippery slope. People should be able to say whatever they want. I'm more talking about, like, how do we evaluate them culturally? Weighing someone's cultural impact versus their kind of, I guess, odious personality. Like, I feel pretty okay, especially considering I don't think his music's that good, with like saying, I don't think Eazy-E was a good person. I think his attachment to the NWA, because I think Straight Out of Compton is an essential rap album. I think it's very important. I think three of the tracks on that album are great. I think the rest are okay, but
yeah.
That being said, it's an important album, and I'm okay with saying Eazy-E actually isn't that important on it. Like, the second NWA album without Ice Cube is flat. Like, it's hilarious looking back how important Ice Cube was, and I'm kind of thankful that he is the least egregiously awful of everyone. It's kind of surprising too, I guess, to listen back to their lives and realize like how much lyrically. It's surprising to realize how much was accurate, like how much their songs about violence and discrimination by the police and gang violence were accurate. It's also surprising in some ways the ways in which they weren't accurate, where they weren't autobiographical at all. And I guess the last thing I do want to say about the audiobook that's got me thinking is there was a hip sort of like a more classic hip hop artist from the 70s and 80s. I can't remember who it was, who had a quote in the book that was essentially like, I think gangster rap was terrible for rap because hip hop was about making cultural statements and gangster rap essentially came around and made it like, it's cool to be a turd. Like, that was the cultural statement was discrimination is bad, but I'm violent. I wouldn't weigh gangster rap fully down in the way that that person did. But if you think about like Grandmaster, Flash, I think it was the song The Message, which is just literally a sociopolitical statement. Like, I think gangster rap is probably net negative for the history of rap, and I think it's come around. I think some tracks from that movement were important. F the Police is extremely important. Obviously, Tupac has a ton, and Biggie Smalls wrote amazing songs. There's a story in there about Tupac during the LA riots deciding arbitrarily to savagely be a person just because, just then, and they asked why. I don't know. I just did it. Jeez. I don't know. I guess I'm just being, I haven't maybe fully digested my thoughts on everything, but I'm just being sort of overwhelmed with feelings reading this book and having listened to a lot of these people.
That sounds rad.
This feeling is terrible.
Yeah.
It's not rad at all. But yeah, no, it's a very good book.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm going to check it out. And it's cool to reconsider those folks in the new context.
The new context.
The new criticism.
Wolfenstein 3, the new context.
There you go. All right. Anything else?
No, that's it. How about you?
All right. First one I've got is a group called White Reaper that I kind of discovered upon. Have you listened to them at all?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think?
I listened to their first album and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I actually found them. I had left Priest's, Nothing Feels Natural. I was revisiting that album and then the Spotify radio kicked in. And the song Eagle Beach came on, and I said, oh my god, what is this? This is amazing. And I had to listen to the entire thing. This is off of the World's Best American Band from last year. Here's a little bit of Eagle Beach. So you get like, I kind of said to you, it's like the guitars of Rat-A-Tat meets the songwriting of like an MGMT or like some other indie pop band.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Let's go a little bit farther because it's got, like, if you're a fan of big riffing, which of course I am, this has got some big riffing on it.
Oh my god. Is that? Is that the chorus to Killing Them Softly?
Oh, maybe.
That sounds great, though. I kind of dismissed them because I wasn't super into that first album, but maybe I need to give them another shot.
The World's Best American Band. I don't know if it's the first album or not, but that song in particular it's so good it could have made a run for my top 50 from last year if I had heard it last year. I think that song is amazing. Here's a little bit from Judy French, the previous song on the album. It's just, it's rock and roll, man. Unironic rock and roll, the way it was always meant to be.
All right.
Big thumbs up for that. What else do we got here? I listened to We Cool for the first time, Jeff Rosenstock's other album here.
Hell yes.
This album rocks, man. It's so good.
It's very good. Very good.
I love it because it's so personal. It's so... inventive. There's always a different sound to it. I was going through this thing. It's a 2015 release, and in the first four tracks I added three of them to my best of 2015 playlist on the first listen. I was like, oh, that's on the list. Oh, that one's on the list too. Yep, that one too. Just consistently great. I think everyone of Jeff Rosenstock's big hits, Nausea seems to be the big one. Yeah. But Nausea's too good not to play. Like, that's Jeff Rosenstock distilled to 15 seconds right there. That's amazing. I love when he goes for the high note and can't hit it.
Yeah.
I feel best when I'm at home switching between porn and RoboCop. That melody is infectious. He brings in saxophones later on in the song. It's just a pure delight. It is fantastic.
Forgetting, let's like move away from that last quote you pulled out, but this album made me feel seen in a way that like very few albums have in my life.
Yeah. You got Beers Again Alone on this thing. We All Get Old Forever.
Yeah.
Some emotional stuff like I'm Serious, I'm Sorry, which feels like it's something personal that he's calling back from his past and talking about. It's great. I feel like I know this guy listening to this album.
Yeah. You know me. I feel like I totally get it.
Couple other things, just real quick. The Shins have been slowly letting out tracks from their upcoming Flipped album called Worm Hearts, which is the inverse of Heartworms. They're playing all of the songs on Heartworms, but flipped. So if it was an electric song before, now it's acoustic, and if it was acoustic before, now it's electric. And they dropped their cover of Cherry Hearts a little while ago. So that one was electric, here it is acoustic. Same song, but a totally different flavor to it. I, for one, am really excited to listen to that thing because I think Heartworms is a lot of fun as an album, and the Shins know how to make good music.
Yeah.
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 Last thing on my list here, Mark, we got an announcement this week that Justin Timberlake will be back with a new album very shortly, Man of the Woods. Hmm. What's your stance on JT?
I'm actually not a fan. I know I'm supposed to be, but...
I'm sorry, did you say actually I'm a fan, dejectedly, or actually I'm not a fan? Because either way, it sounds...
No, well, it's the opposite, actually. I'm not a fan.
Okay.
All right.
I feel like I should really love JT, but I just never quite seem to get there. Even to the point where I'm kind of like, man, I don't get it. I don't understand why he would write that kind of song. Last year, he had that Can't Stop the Feeling, which I thought was drivel.
Drivel?
And, yeah, drivel.
This is a medieval era.
So he's back with the song Filthy. Have you heard this thing?
No.
Oh, let's play a little bit of Filthy. So there's that. That's the first single off the upcoming album. You can't see it, but the album, the single cover, rather, has Filthy by Justin Timberlake in big orange letters. And then around the outside, it says at the very top, this is a song called, so then Filthy. And at the very bottom in writing, it says, this song should be played very loud.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
So the main lyric is, haters gonna say it's fake.
Mm-hmm. I think the main line is wub wub wub.
Wop 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 wop.
Man, had he not heard about dubstep yet?
I think it's his first time hearing about it.
Man.
He's coming to you live from the year 2008.
2008. That's funny. I mean, I'm kind of curious because that sounds like I like dubstep a lot.
Yeah.
That sounds, like, aged. I don't know.
Yeah. The pitchfork write-up for the track, the first sentence says, look what we made him do. Which I thought was pretty funny.
That's pretty good.
He's been presenting himself as sort of like a Bon Iver woodsman here in the lead-up to this album, so we'll see if he leans into that aesthetic rather than the futuristic stuff he's going for here, but... I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got for the week.
Well, that was a big ender.
Back on the listening train. It was a long break, so it's good to get back in the microphone.
Yeah, I've been just nervously standing completely still in my closet waiting to record again.
Cool. Well, it's time for you, Mark. What are we listening to next week?
Well. I was thinking we could listen to Huncho Jack, Jack Huncho, or whatever by Travis Scott and Quavo, but as it turns out, that's technically released December 21st.
Okay.
So we need to decide right now, does that count as this year's album or last year's?
Well, I think it's last year's album, but...
Yeah?
I don't see a reason why we couldn't talk about it.
Well...
I mean, we spent last January talking about Rage Against the Machine, so.
Yeah, but, like, that's my point, is, like, this was, like, a pity choice, maybe? I mean, I like Travis Scott a lot. But if the floodgates are open, maybe we should choose something else.
I think our issue is that I don't know if there's been a whole lot else released. We're coming here in the first few weeks of the new year, and...
Well, I'm saying, what do you want to, like, dig into right now through all music history? Because we're not covering an album from this year. We can cover anything.
I want you to pick, man. It's your pick.
Oh, see, this was a trap. This was a trap, you picking Jeff Rosenthal.
This is a trap as Scott.
Yeah, let's... okay. Let's look at my listening list. I'm just going to pick something.
Do you have any affinity for the hip-hop artist Cupcake?
No! Stop asking me that. I don't know. Who is that?
It's a rap artist.
Okay. I know what we should listen to.
Okay.
Do you like Jaden Smith?
No.
Well, he released Sire last year.
You just said we got this whole pantheon of music to choose from. You're going to pick a Jaden Smith album?
There's a track called Batman on it. It's kind of long. If it was shorter, maybe. That seems like a long time. All right. I mean, is there anything we missed? Oh, you know what? You know what I actually kind of want to... With all this talk of old rap? How about this? Why don't we cover Make America Crip Again by Snoop Dogg?
All right.
Or just straight up go for Reputation by Taylor Swift because I haven't gotten around to that yet.
No. Okay. I refuse.
Okay.
We're putting 2017 behind us.
Well, this is still 2017. Like this, okay, but this it's Snoop Dogg. All right.
We'll give it a shot. We'll throw it back to Snoop Dogg. We're kind of kicking it in a neutral here for the first weeks of the year while we wait for their albums to come out. January brings us new stuff from Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, Camila Cabello's debut album, Joe Satriani, Fallout Boy, Of Mice and Men. We've got Craig David on here. We got Ty Siegel with another album. January's looking pretty cold. Pretty cold.
I don't know. I guess you're right. That's fine. That's how January goes. January's January.
Right. But the Billboard has spoken, Mark. And this week, it looks like this. Number one is Perfect with Ed Sheeran and Beyonce. Number two is Rockstar with Post Malone and 21 Savage. Number three is Havana with Camila Cabello. And since we've talked about all of those already in previous episodes last year, the rules state we must go down to the next one, which the song is No Limit by G-Eazy featuring A$AP Rocky and Cardi B.
Okay. I want to hear more Cardi B. I want to understand Cardi B. Me too.
Same. I think you and I were both sort of light positive on Bodak Yellow, but then by the end of the year that thing got overwhelming attention from almost every major outlet. So let's see what else she's got in her shoes.
Yeah, probably money and power.
Probably blood. Yeah. All right. So tune in next week for Snoop Dogg and the folks that I just mentioned, G-Eazy, A$AP Rocky, and Cardi B. In the meantime, we're going to be releasing a couple other bonus episodes in the stream here. We just got caught up in the activities of last year, and our backlog grew larger than it should have been. So we've got, I think, planned three episodes to come out from our discussions last year, focusing on Fever Ray's Plunge, King Cruel's The Ooze, and Bath's Romaplasm, two of which made our top 15 lists of albums from last year, so lots of good conversation to be had there. If you're interested, check those out. They'll be released as bonus episodes since they're old news at this point, but something else to keep you busy while we search for meaning in January. In the meantime, you can stay tuned elsewhere on the podcast app. Show us some love on our social media pages. We'd love to hear from you. We appreciate the support nonetheless. Mark, it's season three. It's 2018. We're back at it again, man. Here we go.
All right, I'm out of the closet. My arms are swinging. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Play that outro music!